The court will proceed to the third case, Feusting v. Zimmer, Incorporated. Mr. Jackson?
May it please the court. My name is Steve Jackson. I have the honor this morning of representing Zimmer Incorporated. We are here to urge reversal of the judgment and verdict below because they are contrary to science. They are contrary to the extraordinarily well-documented clinical experience of the Insole Burstein 1 knee, the most studied and most successful orthopedic knee implant, and the errors below result from errors of law for the district court at three separate stages in the proceedings. I'll discuss those that occurred during the Daubert proceedings, during the inclusion and exclusion of evidence, and finally during the jury instructions. The Daubert proceedings were conducted under the wrong legal standard. The district court held in its opinion that Daubert motions are disfavored under the law. The district court cited no law for that proposition, and our opponents have cited no law for that proposition, and there is none. Daubert proceedings are integral parts of the search to make sure that scientific evidence...
I think that's a little overstatement that the judge... And I know he said made that statement, but as I view it, it was more, we don't like all these motions in limine, and we want to get on with the thing here.
Well,
but I don't see that the judge abrogated his, maybe decided the Daubert issue. You can argue incorrectly decided it, but that he relinquished his responsibilities under Daubert, I think, is a little bit of an overstatement by you.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully suggest that when we look into what happened then, that it supports our conclusion that he abrogated that responsibility. The district court had before it four studies of the Insole Burstein 1 knee from 1992, 1997, 1999, and 2000. Those studies start at page 71 of the appendix. They reached two extraordinarily important conclusions. First, that over 95% of all of the 649 knees studied are still successfully implanted after 18 years. And secondly, and even more importantly, each of those four studies studied the few that failed. And at the appendix pages 76, 87, 94, and 109, those peer-reviewed study authors conclude that none of the failed Insole Burstein knees failed because of oxidative degradation and polyethylene. So that is the science the district court had before it. Enter Dr. Pugh, who gives two opinions. Number one, at page 41 of the appendix, all polyethylene implants sterilized in air are defective. The holdings of this court, particularly the McMahon case, obligated the district court to say, how do you reach that conclusion? If they're all defective, explain to us the four studies which reach a demonstrably and dramatically different conclusion. The district court did not require Dr. Pugh to do so. He must do so in the language and through the methods of science. And when he was asked in his deposition to account for those differences, he said in appendix page 288, he was asked, if your theory is right and these are all defective, how is the Insole Burstein knee in Mr. Feusting's left knee, for example, still functioning perfectly after almost 20 years? And he said, well, Zimmer got lucky on that one.
But I thought he said it was shelf life that had something to do with it.
Well, Your Honor, there's a lot about shelf life in this case. Zimmer's experts argued that oxidative degradation in non-direct compression molded polyethylene is a factor. Dr. Burstein said if the devices stay on the shelf more than 5 years, this device was only on the shelf for 7 months, which everyone agrees in this case is extraordinarily short. But the bottom line is the demonstrated studies conclusively show that oxidative degradation does not affect the direct compression molded insole bursting one knee. And the district court was obligated to have Dr. Pugh explain, as this court said in its decision in McMahon, how do you get from the generalized principle to the specific experience of this knee, which all the studies show is not susceptible to the generalized principle. And he simply did not do so. Dr. Pugh offered a second opinion, which was equally deficient. Dr. Pugh asserted there is a superior alternate design. You should have sterilized these devices with ethylene oxide. The cases in this court, particularly the Cummins court, require that if there is asserted a superior alternate design, that at the Daubert proceedings, the court must require evidence, not opinion, but evidence that it's superior. And that evidence might be studies of an ethylene oxide or sterilized knee. It might be comparative studies between ethylene and oxide and gamma radiation in air. But there must be some evidence. And there was none presented. The district court at the Daubert proceedings simply allowed Dr. Pugh to assert the superiority of this method without requiring him to bring any evidence to the courtroom of the superiority of that method. As a result, Dr. Pugh's opinions fail every guideline that this court has set out for Daubert. He did no testing to test his broad generalized theory. He didn't publish, and we emphasize the publication requirement here. If Dr. Pugh really has evidence that every orthopedic implant that has a polyethylene component that was sterilized by gamma radiation in air is defective, every one of them, that would make news. That would draw peer-reviewed comment and commentary because it is directly contrary to the peer-reviewed experience of the insole bursting one knee. He made no such effort at publication. His opinion is contrary to the generally accepted scientific knowledge and experience of the insole bursting knee, and importantly, it's at odds with his own published work.
And you had an opportunity to cross-examine him on all that.
Yes, we did.
Vigorously.
Yes, we did. But our ability to cross-examine at trial, Your Honor, is not a substitute for his failure to meet the Daubert threshold during the Daubert proceedings. That's, of course, why we have Daubert proceedings.
I understand that, but I'm saying that once he did testify, I mean, you could point all that out to the jury and did so.
Yes, that's correct. As a result, the Daubert proceedings were fatal.
I mean, going back to Judge Williams' question, I understand the Daubert issues here, but now when you're in front of the jury, obviously this guy had great problems with the right knee, but not with the left. And what is your explanation for the cause of the problems? I know you talk about his weight or something. But
sure. No, there
would that affect both?
There are two very good explanations for this. They come both from Dr. Burstein and from Dr. Maloney. First, Mr. Feasting has a gait abnormality in his right knee, which is not present in his left knee. He hyperextends his right knee when he walks, and that produces a mechanical reaction in the artificial knee, which causes pain. This device was not revised. It was not taken out because of polyethylene problems. It was taken out because of pain. The second thing going on in his right knee that's not going on in his left is an osteophyte, a bone growth which both doctors testified was eating into the polyethylene that's present in his right knee.
And did you ever cross-examine Pugh about your expert's theory on why the implant failed?
Yes, we did.
And pointed out the hyperextension issue as well as the abnormal bone growth?
Yes, we did.
And so that was before the jury as well?
Well, it was, but that...
I mean, in terms of your view and his explanation for that.
Yes, that...
He had also ruled out several potential alternative causes of the implant's failure. That is, Pugh did.
He says he did, yes.
And that was before the jury as well.
Yes, it was. But a perfect example of that colloquy is when we talked about the hyperextension of the knee, which is a biomechanical problem in the knee. Pugh's response was, I have a PhD from MIT, and there was nothing wrong with the geometry of the implant at the surgery. The geometry at the implant of the surgery is entirely different. That's a question of whether or not it was properly aligned. It has nothing to do with how he walks once the implant is in Mr. Feasting's knee. But Dr. Pugh was continually allowed to assert, I have a PhD from MIT, and therefore you should believe me, even though my conclusions are at odds with all known science about this product. That's exactly the problem that Daubert was designed to resolve. The second group of errors occurred during the trial and led to the anomalous result that the plaintiff was allowed to put on evidence of the state of the art from 1995, 2 years after Zimmer quit making the IB1 knee, a method of sterilization never employed on the IB1 knee, and yet it came into evidence over our objection. We objected as to relevance. There's no relevance whatsoever. It's not something that was ever used on this product. We objected under 403B that it was very, very prejudicial to bring in something that was used in the industry 4 years after this product was manufactured, and we objected on 407 on subsequent remedial measures. The district court only ruled on the 407 basis, made no other ruling. This problem was particularly acute because the district court did not allow Zimmer to present evidence on the state of the art in 1991, the year we made the product. Mm-hmm. The state of the art evidence was that every orthopedic manufacturer except one in the country sterilized its orthopedic implants through gamma irradiation in air, the method which we used to sterilize the IB1 knee. And so the district court ended up creating a situation that went to the jury of the anomalous result. The plaintiff gets to put in evidence from 4 years after we made this product about methods of sterilization that were never used on this product, and yet Zimmer is not allowed to introduce evidence of the state of the art at the time we made this product. This allowed the jury simply to conclude that gamma irradiation in an inert environment was feasible and we should have used it, but the jury was never allowed to hear what everyone else in the industry was doing, and Illinois law says that's directly applicable both in strict product liability and in negligence. I see I'm into my rebuttal time, and I'll reserve.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Crowder?
May it please the court. This case is about an IV knee manufactured by Zimmer, but this case started in 2001 when Dr. McKechnie went in for the revision surgery of this IV knee at issue and was surprised when he opened up the knee and saw the severe delamination and erosion of the polyethylene of the IV knee at issue in this case. That surprise, professional surprise on his part, resulted in him sending the knee to Zimmer for evaluation and explanation as to why this knee, rather than other knees that Dr. McKechnie had experience with, other IV knees Dr. McKechnie had experience with, looked like this after only 9.5 years of being in the plaintiff's body. I bring up this point that this case started with Dr. McKechnie because I think it brings up of the flaw in the Zimmer's arguments here regarding Dr. Pugh. Because while Zimmer wants to criticize Dr. Pugh's opinion that gamma sterilization in air resulted in the defect that led to the failure of the IB&E in this case, it ignores the fact that Dr. McKechnie at trial and in his deposition testified to the exact same fact. He testified at trial in the Appendix 523 that, in his opinion, within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, the IV knee failed because of gamma sterilization in air, resulting in subsequent oxidation of the product. This was his opinion at trial.
Well, here, why don't you deal with what I think is the biggest problem, the fact that the court let in the testimony about the treatment in 1995, 4 years later, but didn't let in what was state-of-the-art in 1991, the in-air process.
That's not exactly what happened at the trial, Your Honor. I'll go through and explain my understanding of what happened based on the record.
He wasn't allowed to testify, was he, as to what the standard everybody else was using in 1991?
What happened, and this is the Rule 26 issue that the court addressed when Dr. Burstein was on the stand. Dr. Burstein was going through a direct examination, and they were getting ready to put up an exhibit that basically itemized other manufacturers and tried to put on there what these other manufacturers were doing back in 1991. Prior to this starting, the only thing that we had from Dr. Burstein was that his opinion was that gamma sterilization in air was not defective, that it was the preferred method of sterilization back in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
We had nothing that he had called the manufacturers up, asked them specifically what method were you using back in 1991. So as this gets ready to happen in front of the jury, we raise an objection, and the court asked the exhibits up, and the court asked Dr. Burstein, when did you gather this information that's part of this exhibit? And Dr. Burstein stated, within the last few days. At this point, then the jury's taken out, and we go through.
Why is that even expert opinion, though?
Mm-hmm.
Was everybody in the business using the same method?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no? That doesn't sound that much like an expert opinion. It should be governed by Rule 26.
And it really wasn't that question, but I'll explain why this was important, because it provided the basis for his opinion that gamma sterilization in air was not defective. So it did provide a basis, and Rule 26 directly talks about, look, if you're going to give an opinion, then the basis of your opinion have to be disclosed. And that's what happened here. While this might not, the court might not consider this to be opinion, this might be fact according to the court,
right.
But quite clearly this information was gathered after discovery closed, after we deposed Dr. Burstein, basically after discovery had closed.
That's a different basis upon which to object to it, though. But I think it was factual, not opinion. He's just listening. These are all the people. This is the method everybody used. That's another reason. You know, you didn't disclose it. You didn't disclose it in advance. We had no way to, you know, prepare for it. That's a separate issue.
And that's what the court was addressing when we made our objection at the time. But I still think that it provides, even though it's factual, it provides a basis for his opinion, and we have to be aware of what he's going to say so that we can respond to it. If we would have been aware of that, then we can react. We can react by going out and getting other manufacturers that they perhaps didn't call for whatever reasons they wouldn't have called those. Maybe Dr. Burstein knew that these used ethylene oxide rather than gamma sterilization in air. We would have had time to respond. But in this particular instance, when you start putting up manufacturers and you try putting up what their method of sterilization was, and it's the first time we've seen it when it gets in front of the jury, that to me is air if you allow that in, because Rule 26 discusses that. The other thing that the court had asked me, why not allow what happened in 1991 to come in, and why allow 1995 stuff to come in? Really, the court did not prohibit Dr. Burstein from testifying that that gamma sterilization in air was used as the preferred method. He would never have refused to allow him to testify as to what was in his report, which was, in his opinion, gamma sterilization in air was a preferred method. That question never got asked after the Rule 26 issue was brought up, but that wasn't something the court was going to prohibit. That was defendant's decision not to go into that after the Rule 26 ruling.
Did the court clearly state that you can ask that question, that it would be appropriate to ask?
I don't know
whether or not that was the preferred method at the time.
I don't know if the court specifically said, look, I'm not prohibiting you from following what's said in the Rule 26 report. But all the court did was, when this exhibit came up, said, no, you're not using that exhibit as a basis for your opinions, because that's not disclosed in Rule 26. So quite clearly, the standard, in his opinion, that the standard is gamma sterilization in air, could have come in, and actually did come in, if you look at the record, Obviously, Zimmer had other experts who testified. Dr. Maloney testified. Their expert, the orthopedic expert, testified. He said gamma sterilization in air was used. There's another expert, not an expert, but another witness from Zimmer, Audrey Patmore, who testified, and she indicated that gamma sterilization in air was a method they used in 1991 for this particular product, the IV knee. So there was other testimony about this being the method that was used, and obviously they were cross. And obviously there was cross examination of Dr. Pugh as to, well, who else uses ethylene oxide? And of course he went through his. Were you aware of gamma sterilization in air being used by other manufacturers? That was cross examined on. The court had also asked,
and he admitted that he was aware of other manufacturers.
He said he was not aware that other manufacturers were using it at the time.
Right.
He was aware of it now.
Right, but in terms of use in 1991, he didn't acknowledge that it had been used by other manufacturers in 91.
He acknowledged after the fact that it had been used in 1991. He didn't acknowledge that he knew it was going on at that time.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Can I take you back to this Daubert thing here? This knee, this artificial knee, was implanted in a lot of people and pretty successful. It seems to me that if an opinion that this air sterilization was not the best way to do it and make people susceptible to these major problems, that there should have been some literature to that effect, peer review and that sort of thing. And Pew just pulls this opinion out during the trial that he worked up, and isn't that really what Daubert is supposed to do, to ferret out these kind of things? And it just seems to me, when you got something that's as popular and apparently as successfully used as this, and then you have a trial situation where somebody, an expert's going to come in and testify that the industry's been doing us the wrong way for all this period of time, that really raises significant Daubert questions.
I would say that in response to that, there's a couple of thoughts that come to mind. Number one, these literatures that was cited by Zimmer, they're retrospective case reviews. And Dr. Maloney testified, now this was at trial, so different, but Dr. Maloney testified that these can't be relied upon for a couple of reasons. Number one, they always involve the innovator. And if they involve the innovator, you've got a potential bias that's already been implemented into the literature. The second thing is, you're looking at these retrospective case studies, and they're basically at these institutions that all they do is orthopedic implants. They don't represent what the rest of the world, what happens in the rest of the world. They're very case specific to a specific orthopedic institution that has the best of the best, so to speak. And so these retrospective case studies really are not reliable. The other thing that I comment on, there is no suggestion that gamma sterilization in air, which results in oxidation, is going to affect every polyethylene component the same way. Quite clearly, our people, Dr. Pugh and Dr. McKechnie, testified that no, you can't say that oxidation is going to result in this happening at this period of time, because there's variables that result in oxidation affecting one product other than one polyethylene component different than another. Lots of variables that can affect that. But what they did, and what was the methodology that was used, and I think supported in the Hodrick, Illinois Supreme Court case, was, look, there are factors. Everybody agreed there's factors that play and wear. Those factors include surgical technique, they include patient weight, they include patient activity, they include whether there's any trauma, they include polyethylene, the method of polyethylene sterilization. And what you were able to do, what Dr. McKechnie and what Dr. Pugh were able to do, is through the x-rays, through the records, through knowledge of what happened in this particular case, rule out those other factors that play into wear of polyethylene.
I'm sorry, when you're done.
And I was getting ready to say that we had as our support that delamination, what occurred in this particular case, was in the literature. It's talked about delamination being being what happens when a product, polyethylene product, is gamma sterilized in air and oxidation occurs. This results in delamination. So we had that as a basis for the conclusion that, in fact, when you rule out all these other factors, gamma sterilization in air was the one that was left as the reason that this failed.
So I want to talk to you, too, more along the lines of what Judge Evans raised under, in terms of Pugh's theory of causation under 702. So we don't have, he didn't conduct any tests or cite any studies supporting his theory. He just relied on basic polymer science. His theory was not subject to peer review and publication, right? Two of the other factors, potential rate of error and existence of maintenance standards and controls, don't apply here. Whether his theory, the next is his theory generally accepted in the scientific community, it really has not gained any recognition in the scientific community. And Feusting cites several articles recognizing the deleterious effects of the gamma irradiation in the components. The opinion developed expressly for purposes of litigation, I mean, that doesn't really weigh in your favor. Extrapolating from an accepted premise to an unfounded conclusion, here your expert says that the science does reveal that the design sterilization process does indeed subject the implant to destructive forces, but by itself, without the performance of scientific examination, I mean, that can't stand alone. I mean, when you go down the list of 702, a lot of the basis Pugh doesn't measure up to.
Well, that's not completely accurate, Your Honor. I'll explain why. If you look at the articles that Feusting cited in its brief, they were articles that completely supported his opinions. Now, he didn't cite specifically to each of these articles, but there's articles in the literature, articles part of this record that under 803.18 were admitted as learned treatises, and they talk about such things. And here's one that the defendant's expert wrote. It's been known for some time that ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene oxidizes after gamma irradiation in air. This is a concern, as the chemical changes cause changes in the physical properties in the material. Oxidation would be expected to increase the brittleness of polyethylene. Increased oxidation leads to increased wear of the devices. That's Dr. Burstein. Now, if that doesn't support our own theory that this gamma irradiation in air set this product up for a delamination effect and failure, then there would be nothing that more in support of this. There was other articles that we cited on the record. I could go through the number of them, but they all basically go along the same lines. The science was there well before 1991, and we recited a 1981 article, a 1982 article, all of them saying, look, gamma irradiation in air changes the structure of polyethylene. It creates an oxidative effect. The oxidation, free radicals are created, and they are deleterious to the and result
Scratter,
in elimination.
Would you acknowledge that the district judge here supplied us with a rather brief analysis of his Daubert review?
It was brief, but I would argue to the court that the parties submitted a great deal of documentation,
and
we supported
that.
Our position.
I mean, for us to get to the comfort level that the analysis occurred, it sometimes helps if we have a little more expansive exposition.
Yeah, and if I could comment just one quickly on rule on the Rule 50 motions, the court did talk about he was considering all the evidence that was coming in, what the experts were saying, and he basically commented. He said, these articles read by Mr. Holmes during Dr. Burstein's cross examination show that there is contradiction among the learned people in this field. And contradiction doesn't prohibit testimony under Daubert. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, thank you, Mr. Crowder. Mr. Johnson? Jackson?
Thank you, Your Honor. The colloquy that you just had with Mr. Crowder really highlights what was wrong with the district court's Daubert analysis. The 1981-1982 studies are not studies of direct compression molded polyethylene. Zimmer has always acknowledged that if you take regular RAM-extruded polyethylene and if you irradiate it with gamma radiation and air, and if it sits on the shelf life for a long time, chemical properties change. But the whole point of the Daubert proceeding was to take that general observation and to test whether or not it applies to direct compression molded Insol Burstein 1 polyethylene knees, because the science that's reviewed that says it does not. And it was incumbent upon Dr. Pugh, using the language and the methods of science, to explain how he could get there. And he can't. We ask him in his deposition. He can't do it. The second thing that Mr. Crowder just said is, well, he looked at it and he said that when you have delamination, that's the hallmark. That's the only thing left. As we pointed out in our brief, that is a theory which is subject to Daubert analysis. The claim that there is some signature physical manifestation of oxidative degradation of polyethylene is a theory which needs to be peer-reviewed. That needs to be put up and see if any other peers shoot at that. Finally, Dr. McKechnie, he mentioned. Dr. McKechnie testified at page 552 of the appendix, this is the best device ever. I used it in 1985 because it was the best. I used it in 1992 because it was the best. And he was allowed to testify over my objection about causation, and the district court said he could testify as causation because he had an undergraduate degree in chemistry. I respectfully suggest that's not enough. This is the best orthopedic knee implant studied and tested in the market. It's uncorrected error of law which needs to be reversed to find that it was either negligently designed or defectively designed.
So let me get back to this 1991 state of the art. Even if we agree with you that this wasn't expert testimony, this was lay testimony, why was this exhibit whipped out during trial and not, you know, the showing what other manufacturers' methodology had been? Why was that whipped out at trial and not disclosed during discovery?
Well, it was a demonstrative exhibit.
It was a demonstrative exhibit that it had some factual data, that is, all these other manufacturers who were using this methodology. Why wasn't that discoverable?
Well, they deposed Dr. Burstein. They could have asked him, when you say that gamma radiation and air was the preferred and predominant method in 1991, what's your basis for saying so? And he would have said, I know because I had contracts with this company, this company, this company, and this company. And they all know, from personal experience I know, that they use gamma and air. So he could have testified without the exhibit to the same thing. Certainly that would have come in based on his personal experience.
But those questions weren't put to him after the exhibit was denied.
They were put to him in my proffer to him.
No, but I mean specifically at trial. He didn't go through the companies that were using that method.
I did in my proffer. You'll find that at appendix pages 818 to 820.
Yeah, but I'm concerned about what came out during the trial as well. That didn't come out.
That's correct. After the objection to my proffer was sustained, I did not then go back and in the presence of the jury try and get that same evidence in.
Okay, I understand.
I mean, I understood the district court's ruling to be it's not coming in, you're done.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.